Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
They said the house he moved into was nearly 100 years old. And I believed it. A pretty structure on the far outskirts of Berlin. Our new house stood 2 stories tall, encased in a crisscross pattern of dark wooden framework. Outside the windows were balconies full of flowers, and the entire left side was overgrown with ivy. Inside, the place was dark and wooden, but intricately elegant. On the left, the entry hall continued back to the kitchen and dining rooms. On the right, a staircase climbed its way to the second floor landing. I stood at the fork, a suitcase in each hand, gawking at the ornateness of it all. My sister, Lena, pushed past me, stomping up the staircase in a needless hurry. When I realized what she was doing, I chased after her. The suitcases did nothing to aid my speed. Lena reached the second floor and burst into the first bedroom on the right, spinning to take in the view. It was deliciously spacious, complete with an adjacent bathroom, 2 windows, and a walk-in closet. Lena tossed the luggage onto the bed and turned to face me. "Finest keepers, Axel. I got it first, and I'd like some privacy if you don't mind." "Lena, please," I said, still panting from the journey up. "Mama said I could have the upstairs." "You can. There are 2. Yours is across the hall." She smiled at me and nodded out the doorway. On the other side of the upstairs landing was another door. The cheap white paint was visibly flaked and cracked, even from this distance. I winced at the sight of it. "Please close the door on your way out," said Lena, using her cell phone camera to inspect a makeup job. Across the landing, I set my suitcase in front of the door and tried the knob. Glass instead of metal. But it wouldn't budge. I rammed my shoulder into it. And when that didn't work, I planted my feet firmly on the ground and pressed against it with my back, putting all my weight into it. This time, the door opened with a violent shudder, and I went reeling into the floorboards in my new bedroom. The space was empty, save for a single bed frame that stood no higher than 2 feet off the ground, a rectangular skeleton that threatened to break under the weight of even one person. The walls were cream-colored and cracked. The windows were 1 instead of 2. A naked light bulb jutted from the ceiling, a single string dangling from it. On the far wall, close to the ground, was a single vent. Aside from these basic necessities, there was nothing. I had half a mind to march back to Lena's room and demand a room change. The other half of me knew this was a useless pursuit, and I was too tired to initiate such a conflict. I'd spent all day in the backseat of my car, longing to stretch my legs past a 90-degree angle. I spent the rest of the evening hauling luggage up to my second-floor bedroom and installing pieces of furniture that did little to make it more inviting. Lena's room had a view of the surrounding houses, but from my single window, you could see only the trees of the forest behind our house, and the sun setting behind them. By the time I finished my job, nighttime had fully taken over. The bedroom had become atrociously dim, seeing as the only light bulb was weak and on the verge of blinking out altogether. I'd snapped on some extra lamps I'd installed and examined my handiwork. There was now a dresser up against the wall, a nightstand near the bed, a clock, a rug, and a mattress on the bed frame, complete with a blanket and pillow. The dresser and nightstand were decorated with framed photos of our family, some dating back to the 40s and 50s. My grandparents when they were only children. Grandpa Werner in front of his shoe store, our last name, Schumacher, translated quite well to the English words shoemaker, a business that had run in the family for decades. There were black and white family photos taken in front of this very house. It had been inherited, of course. With my grandfather's recent death, he'd left us the house, and my father was intent to move in instead of sell it. I was sweaty from so many treks up the stairs, and it was a long walk to the bathroom down the hall to wash my face. Damn Lena. So I flopped onto the bed, shielding my eyes from the bulb with one arm. I must have fallen asleep, because the next thing I knew, the clock on the wall read 5:30. In less than an hour, I would be getting ready for my first day at a new secondary school. It was still dark outside. What had woken me up wasn't an early bird or an alarm clock. I'd woken up to a breathy sound, like air being blown in short bursts. By the time I sat up, it was gone. I listened for a while, and it started again. The breathing. Paranoid, I leaned over to look between my legs, but beneath the bed was empty. I pulled open the drawers in the dresser, lifted the mattress, checked out the nightstand. I ran my fingers along the windowsill to check that it was shut tight. The breathing sound continued, soft and slow, in and out. Sometimes it stopped completely, but it always started up again. Eventually, I put my ear to the wall and began to slide along it, listening for the source. The breathing was louder now, and I flattened myself to the plaster, moving from wall to wall as quietly as I could, as though a sound too loud might scare the thing away. I knelt down, crouching further and further, until I faced the vent, where the breathing was the loudest. It was a large vent, a rusting metal grate that seemed older than the house itself, held in place by the way of four screws. I tried to see beyond the slats, but there was only black. The breathing was so close that I could almost feel it on my skin, weak and rasping. "Hello?" came a voice from beyond the vent. "Who's there?" I froze, dead in my tracks, my skin prickling with goose flesh. The voice was distinctly feminine and very high-pitched. It was so weak and so quiet that the words sounded as fragile as glass. She was as afraid as I was, and perhaps that was the only reason I responded. "I'm Axel," I said truthfully, after a long hesitation. "Axel Schumacher, what are you doing in our house?" There was a long pause. The breathing stopped again. "I live here," whispered the voice, her high-pitched words echoing from the metallic world of the vent. "It isn't safe out there, Axel Schumacher. Not for me." Silence. "Not anymore." "Why not? What's wrong with you?" The words were harsher than I'd intended. I couldn't see much, but there was movement behind the slats as the girl shifted her position. "We're a different breed, you and I. Can't you come out? I can help you, get you to the police." "It doesn't work that way, Axel." I sat upright on my knees, my hands on my lap. I could feel her exhalations from the vent, but they were wretchedly cold, like flurries of snow. "How long have you been there?" I asked. "A long time. Too long, in fact. Now, I'm the only one left. Everyone else is dead." A chill ran down my spine that had little to do with the girl's breathing. I swallowed and said, "Who's dead?" I waited, but this time the girl didn't respond. After a while, Faint sobs began to seep through the vent, echoing as if from far, far away. "I'm sorry," I said. "I didn't mean to upset you." Silence. And then, the deafening blast of an alarm clock startling me out of my skin. I reeled backward and scrambled for the off button, suddenly remembering my school day ahead. I stumbled away as if walking from a trance, staring at the vent in utter horror. There was no breathing. There was nothing. I snatched my school bag and a fresh set of clothes. I changed in the bathroom down the hall, where hopefully no one could see me. Just as I was about to shut the door, however, the voice returned. "Axel?" it said, quiet, almost inaudible. I turned back to the vent, watching the black slats intensely. "Please, don't leave me." I stepped back into the room and crouched low. "We'll talk more when I get home from school. I won't tell anyone about you, I promise. Until then, will you at least give me your name?" The breathing was slow and methodical. Even from this distance, I thought I could feel the chill in the air. In and out. In and out. Ragged and diseased. "My name is Lorelei. We'll talk after school, Axel Schumacher." Wolfram Secondary School was close to the house. So close, in fact, that I began walking there instead of asking for rides from my parents. I had enough on my mind anyway. I wanted to be alone. It was hard to focus on my new classes when my mind kept drifting to Lorelei and her melancholy voice. I found myself daydreaming in class, doodling what I imagined she looked like on sheets of notebook paper. I was rudely interrupted when my notebook slammed shut, flattening my pencil and sending a long scroll of graphite across my illustration. I looked up into the face of Mrs. Walter, who had been lecturing the class on geography a moment before. With my ears pinched tightly between two fingers, I was dragged down the hallway to Principal Krause's office. Mr. Krause was a lanky man with big hands and a mustache. He examined my illustration, not with distaste, but with a stern interest. "Who is this Lorelei? Is she a friend?" said Mr. Krause. I shook my head slowly, regretting that I'd written her name in the first place. I'd drawn her as a blonde girl. No colour with pencil, of course, so I simply left her hair unshaded. Thin and plain, with sad eyes and fair skin. I'd given her summer dress with flowers on it. It was what her voice brought to mind. "No one," I said. "I made her up." "Well," said Mr. Krause, "at least you're no stalker. I hope you know Wolfram is not a school of the arts, and as such, I'll be keeping this for now." And he shut the notebook in the top drawer of his desk. At home, I stopped downstairs to collect two things. The first was an apple, and the second was a screwdriver from my father's toolkit. Then I was taking the stairs two at a time and rushing into my bedroom, shutting the door behind me so our voices wouldn't drift into Lena's room. "I'm back," I said breathlessly, crouching in front of the vent. "Lorelei, I'm back." At first, the only sound I heard from inside the vent was a faint scratching. Faint, but continuous. "I missed you, Axel," said Lorelei at last. "It gets lonely when I'm by myself." Scratch, scratch, scratch. "I missed you too," I said. "I can't believe I'm saying it, but I missed the girl inside my wall." I blushed, realizing I may have overstepped. The scratching continued. "What are you doing?" Lorelei said, "It's hard to keep track of time, being here for so long. Scratching tallies into the wall helps me remember how long I've been back here. One tally for one day at a time." the scratching stopped. I remember the apple and screwdriver in my hands. I've been thinking about it, and I'm curious about how you get food and water. You must come out sometime, unless you have your own restaurant back there. You're funny, Axel, said Lorelei, but her voice was humorless, and she didn't laugh. I told you that we're different. I don't need to eat anymore. I don't get hungry, but I do miss the taste of food. Sometimes I like to remember my favorite foods. Everyone likes to eat, I said bluntly. But at this, Lorelei didn't respond. I brought you an apple, if you'd like one. It can't be healthy, not eating. I do miss the taste of apples. If you want it, you're going to have to do something for me first, I said. What's that? I want answers. I like talking to you, but I don't know anything about you. You live inside my wall, and I don't even know who you are. A long, ice-cold exhalation seeped through the vent slats. Maybe I like it that way, but I'll play along. I sat upright, placing the apple on the floor in front of me. Question one. Why isn't it safe for you to leave? There was a long silence. She was carefully weighing how much information to give away. Bad people, Axel. There are bad people who want to kill me. Next question. It wasn't much, but I had a feeling it was all I was going to get. Question two. You said that people died. I want to know who died. Another long silence. In my short time with Lorelei, I had grown used to it. Everyone. Friends. Family. People I was close to. People like me. I hadn't heard of any large group of people dying anytime recently. A part of me wondered if Lorelei was making things up, or telling half-truths instead of the full story. If she was telling the truth, the people like her were all in hiding. That option seemed much worse. Question 3. What do you look like? Like I said, Axel, I don't need to eat. The apple I can take or leave. And there are questions I don't feel comfortable answering. Not right now. I sighed. She had a point. It was useless to bribe her with food if she didn't want it in the first place. I assured myself that I would get answers later, one way or another. The important thing was that she was here and no one knew about her. Slowly, methodically, I used the screwdriver to remove each of the four screws bordering the vent. Then I removed the grate and set it aside. Beyond, there was only blackness. I thought I saw movement, but it might have been a trick of the eye. Leaving the apple placed in front of the vent, I stepped back a few paces and waited. Only Lorelei's voice emerged. Please, don't look, Axel. I'm not ready for you to see me. Not yet. I turned around. I might have respected Lorelei's wish if there hadn't been a mirror hanging on my wall. Too curious to look away, I waited to see what happened next. From the dark rectangle of the vent emerged a hand, so pale it was white, with yellowed fingernails and crooked fingers. Her arm appeared up to the elbow, bearing open sores and great patches of rotted flesh. In one spot, I thought I could see exposed bone. Lorelei's broken fingers curled around the apple and she pulled it into the maw of darkness. You can look now, Axel. I turned around, my heart thudding in my chest. I had to force myself to move slowly, not wanting to give away any urgency of closing the wall between us. I replaced the grate and twisted all four screws into place, then sat back while Lorelei chewed on the apple. Mmm, she said between great, crunchy bites. I had almost forgotten what they tasted like. Apples. Better than I remember, in fact. Vibrant, like seeing colours after living in a world of black and white. There are more in the pantry, I told her. Lots more, whenever you'd like. Thank you, Axel. Lorelei, I said, my mouth going dry. Are you sick? Sick? She sounded surprised. I wished I hadn't said it. In what way? I don't know. I'm sorry, I... Who are you talking to? Came a voice. It was harsher than Lorelei's. I whirled around to find Lena standing in my doorway, the door wide open. I closed that for a reason, I said, quickly standing upright. I held the screwdriver behind my back. Lena's eyes drifted from me to the vent, then back to me. I don't know what you're doing, but it's weird. Since we moved in, all you've done is spend the whole time in your room, and I swear that you've been talking to someone. I don't know what you think you're hiding, but I'll find out. I always do. Is that all? I said. Actually, I came to tell you that your backpack was in the kitchen. She dropped my school bag onto the floor and pulled the door halfway shut. Whatever creepy boyish thing you're up to, could you make it quieter? Goodbye, Lena. She closed the door. The moment she did, I crouched before the vent. We'll have to be quieter, Lorelei. My sister is starting to suspect something, and if you're in as much danger as you seem to believe, I can't risk you getting caught. I had a sister once, said Lorelei distantly. Once. I spent the whole night talking to Lorelei, hugging my knees to my chest, leaning sideways against the vent. Each of her breaths brought with it a cold expulsion of air, but even that was oddly comforting. Lorelei's answers about her past remained as vague as ever, so I stopped asking. She wasn't comfortable with the subject, and I didn't want to pry. Our conversations moved to more superficial areas, discussing the outside world and what she'd missed since she started hiding. She wouldn't reveal how long she'd been hiding behind the wall, but I guessed it had been a while. She wasn't familiar with any of the TV shows and movies I mentioned, and had no clue about any of the local businesses. I showed her my iPhone, which she examined through the vent, fascinated. That's amazing, Axel. It really is. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything so bright. Yeah, but it does more than glow. You can call or text people, play games, and this here, this is Instagram. Lorelei asked about the world outside, and I told her what she wanted to know. She asked about me and my family. When it came time to leave for school again, I almost didn't go. That day at Wolfram was worse than the last. I kept falling asleep because I'd been awake all night and students were giving me strange looks in the hallway. A group of girls whispered under their breath while staring in my direction. I was the weird new kid who always seemed to have his head in the clouds. When I was sent to Principal Krause for the second day in a row, my parents were phoned and were informed of my dissatisfactory behaviour. When Principal Krause stepped out of the room for a moment, I stole my notebook from the drawer of his desk. After school that day, I slipped my drawing through one of the open slits in the vent. I drew a picture of you, I told her. I don't know what you look like, but this is what I imagined. If you hold it up to the light, you might be able to see it. It's beautiful, said Lorelei. It really is, but it's not. I swallowed. Is something wrong? Well, it's not entirely accurate. That was okay. I knew it wasn't accurate. I couldn't get the image of her arm out of my head. Her arm with its sores and wounds. The fingers that looked broken and irreparable. I wondered briefly if she had been in some sort of accident, a car crash or something. It would explain why she didn't want me to see her. That was okay. I loved her anyway. I love you, Lorelai. I love you too, Axel. Over the next few weeks, my performance in school hardly improved. My parents confined me to my room in off hours, a punishment I had little objection to. It was more time I got to spend with Lorelai, curled up in front of the vent, telling each other secrets. I often spent all night talking to her, reading to her, showing her drawings I'd made. I brought her apples that I snuck from the pantry, and occasionally removed the vent to hand them off. I pretended to close my eyes, but never did. And even though I was often exhausted during the daytime, sleeping the afternoon away, Lorelai claimed she didn't need to sleep, just like she didn't need to eat. She said that she liked to watch me while I slept. She remembered when she could dream like that. Each day, a new tally was scratched into the wall behind the vent. By the time 2 weeks had passed, I had already been suspended from Wolfram Secondary for doing nothing aside from draw, daydream, and fall asleep. My parents were disappointed, understandably. But the time off left me holed up in my room with nothing to do but talk to Lorelai. That was okay, because she was all I could think about anyway. I wanted badly to see her. I wished that she could come into the light, if only for a moment, to talk to me. I'd already made up my mind that if she was disfigured by some sort of illness or accident, it wouldn't bother me. Our bond had never had any element of physical attraction in the first place. I told her this too. One day, I said, "Lorelai, are you awake?" "I'm always awake, Axel." I sat, parallel to the vent, cross-legged, staring at the opposite wall. "I've been thinking a lot lately. About us. I want you to know that I like you for who you are. Your personality. Your thoughts and ideas. Those are what make you a person. Not your appearance." "Those are very kind words, Axel. I appreciate it." "That being said, I'd like to see you. Come into the light for just a moment and we don't have to leave my room. It's safe out here." From inside the vent, I could hear her shift uncomfortably. She said, "I like the darkness." "Then I'll come see you," I said. "I can fit through the vent. I just want to see your face." "I don't know, Axel." I was already twisting screws out of the metal gate. I could hear footsteps clacking across the wooden floor outside my bedroom. Lena. I snatched the flashlight from the nightstand and pulled the grate aside, squeezing myself through the hole. It was a tight fit, but not too tight. Unsurprisingly, the vent led not to a metal shaft, but to an open room, hidden discreetly behind the wall. I wiggled through head first and pulled my legs through last, then immediately held the metal gate flush with a hole. The screws were still on the floor outside, so I held it in place with my fingers. The moment I did, the glass doorknob jiggled and Lena burst into the room, stopping mid-sentence. "Who are you talking to?" I watched her through the narrow slits of the vent. She spun around, searching for me, confused. From behind me, I could feel Lorelai's ice-cold breath waving against my neck. It was the first time we'd been in the same room. Lena noticed the screws and came so close that all I could see were her sneakers. A disembodied voice hand-plucked one of the screws from the ground. Lena crouched into view, peering through the slats, but I knew she couldn't see me. The darkness back there was almost supernatural in its ability to hide things just beyond the vent. I held my breath anyway, not daring to move. She tugged at the grate, and I fought to hold it in place. And when it didn't budge, Lena gave up. She frowned directly at me and left the room, shutting the door behind her. I let out an audible breath and pushed the vent to the side. Switching on the flashlight, I spun to face the room behind me. It wasn't large, and disastrously unfinished. The walls were compromised of ancient wooden boards, but the most peculiar thing about them were the tally marks. There were thousands, small lines etched wretchedly into groups of five that blanketed the walls entirely. Line, 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 slash. Line, 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 slash. My flashlight swept the place, taking it all in, illuminating a number of tallies that were too many to count. Later, when I had the courage to enter the house again, I would count the tallies and learn that there were exactly 28,000, dating back to 1943's war-torn Germany, when a Jewish family of three sisters and a mother was hidden in this very room. After the residing German family were captured and executed, there was no one around to remove the heavy furniture blocking the false vent in the wall. The people inside had no choice but to starve. But it wasn't the three skeletal bodies on the ground that bothered me. It was the ice-cold hand on my shoulder, the one with broken fingers and nails like razors, that unsettled me the most. I spun around, shining my light into the face of a corpse that was long dead, and yet, somehow, not dead at all. Her skin was white, her black hair stringy and falling out, her nose entirely gone, revealing an upside-down, heart-shaped gap in her face. She had both eyes, but they were dry and lifeless, and her gaunt cheeks were teeming with maggots that weaved in and out of her flesh, which had rationally failed to decompose any more since her death 77 years before. Her thin lips peeled back to reveal rotted, brown teeth, and when she spoke, her throat worked hard to produce a sound that had any resemblance to what it did in life. "Am I beautiful, Axel Schumacher?" said Lorelei in her melancholy voice. "Won't you kiss me?"
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.